Why have you done this to me, O man of God? Have you come to call attention to my guilt and to kill my son? In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. I fled him down the nights and down the days. I fled him down the arches of the years. I fled him down the labyrinthian ways of my own mind. And in the midst of tears, I hid from him under the running laughter. Up vista-ed hopes I sped and shot precipitated down titanic glooms of chasm and fears. From these strong feet that followed after me. But with unhurrying chase and unperturbed pace, deliberate speed, majestic instancy, they beat. And a voice beat more insistent than the feet. All things betray thee, who betrays me. These are the beginning lines of Francis Thompson's great work, great poem, The Hound of Heaven. The Hound of Heaven. And it was in these words where he's describing his own life. This Francis Thompson was a British poet of the late 19th century. And he was a brilliant medical student. Well, what happened in his life, tragedy struck in his life because his mother was taken from him at a very young age. And this caused him to become very grieved. In fact, so much that he abandoned his faith and stopped practicing his Catholic faith even at a very young age. But what he spent his life doing is pursuing as his father desired, not as he desired, to become a great physician, a great doctor. He really wanted to be a poet, really wanted to give his life to literature. But he pursued this. And in the midst of his difficulty studying, although he was a very good student, he developed a chronic illness which attacked his body. And because of this, his doctors told him that he should take some opium in order to alleviate that suffering. And as he did so, it alleviated his suffering, but also created with him a great addiction. We know these kind of addictions like Prince, who famously just died of an overdose because of an opium addiction. Well, he had this addiction in his life, and it caused him, it took over his very life. It began to define who he was. And soon, he actually left school, abandoned that, disappeared really, and began wandering the streets of London all throughout. The only way that he was able to support himself after abandoning his studies was by selling matches and newspapers on street corners, by hailing cabs for those who wanted to have a cab when just being a beggar, begging for alms. This is how he led his life, after having such a great intellect and have a promising future. This addiction destroyed him. This addiction destroyed him even so much to the point of where his one solace in life was to be able to go to the public library, to be able to deepen his mind, his intellect for a little bit. Until one day, when he was kicked out, they said because he was too disheveled, too dirty, smelled too bad, he was disturbing the other patrons, and so he was no longer allowed to go to the public library. At this point, he was in sort of a spiral of depression, of self-destruction, which continued under utter despair. Francis, what he was vexed by depression, by these thoughts of his own worthlessness, of how he'd never amount to anything, and how he was, at this point, already as good as dead. And so what he purposed in his life is that he said, if I'm already dead, why not go the extra step? I should just end it all. And he made certain preparations to do it. You know, in the gospel today, what are we surrounded by? But death. Death permeates our gospel, our first reading as well. It's all throughout the readings which we have. Death, death. Two women who are widows. Two women who lose their sons. Their only sons, as it says. Remember, a woman in these times was not able to support herself in any way without a man to be able to do so. And here, her young man was lost. So she herself was abandoned. Her husband had died long ago, and now she was left for nothing. No future, no hope, nothing good could come of this. Such was her despair. You can imagine the scene that's around there, right? You see that long procession of so many people who are present, right? You also see everybody with those black garments of mourners. You can see those tear-stained cheeks, those bloodshot eyes, men carrying that bier on which the young man's body lays. And then the weeping. The weeping nun, which was greater and more illustrious than that of the mother. As she cries out for her only son, as hope, the last bit of hope streams from her soul. How did this man die? You know, the scriptures don't tell us. Maybe it was a disease, long, short, prolonged, chronic. Maybe it was some sort of work accident that happened, or a drug overdose. Maybe it was some inflicted harm by himself. We don't know, but we do know it's tragic. But then in the midst of this tragedy, what happens is that Jesus arrives. He walks onto the scene with a crowd who's following him. This crowd meets that crowd. Jesus' crowd meets the crowd of mourners. And what it says within the scriptures is that he saw her, the woman, the widow, in her distress. And what happened within her, is that he was moved with pity, or rather, moved with mercy for her. The Greek has it very well. The Greek word is esplansniste. Esplansniste, which literally means his inmost being was moved. His insides were all churned up. What it means is that at the very depths of who Jesus is, he could not bear to see this woman, this widow, in her distress. His whole being was stirred up because of it. This is a powerful word, and it expresses how Jesus looks at the souls who are weeping and mourning within his own love. So much so is this churning and moving that he almost immediately walks up to her, cries out, "Do not weep," and then proceeds to approach the coffin and touch it. Now, you may know that I've done a lot of funerals here, right? And one of the things that I've noticed each and every time I come here for a funeral is something about the pallbearers. You know, those who walk alongside the coffin. They're always very strong men. They're big, strong men. Now, the role is mostly ceremonious in this time. They have little rollers where they roll the coffin on, mostly. But nonetheless, you still choose very strong men to perform this role. And what I notice about them is that they're pretty mean and intimidating-looking guys that you get up there to do it. I don't know why. Just about every funeral, it's mean, intimidating-looking guys who are lining the coffin there. They all have those. They're all tatted up, and they got big, strong muscles, and they wear those sunglasses that make them really intimidating. And so when I approach there, I step back a little bit because I notice that these guys aren't ready to mess around. They look like they're ready. If somebody were to do something, they're ready to launch into action and set up another funeral, something like that. So see that as these men who are approaching and holding that beard. But then Jesus comes from a stranger, somebody who they don't know, starts calling out to the widow in some sort of way and moves like he's going to take the coffin in some sort of way. It's like they're ready to turn him over, ready to keep him from coming anywhere near the situation. But somehow there's an openness. So Jesus actually does approach, and when he touches the coffin, everybody stops. Everybody stops. And when he touches that coffin, not only does he just touch it, but he makes a command and he says, "Young man, I say to you, arise." And that's exactly what happens. When Jesus speaks, what his words do actually happen in reality. And so the man sits up, he begins to speak, and then the scriptures say he gives this son back to his mother. He doesn't just give her her son. She gives her hope. She gives her a future. She gives her a realization that the clouds are parting, that there is a future for her. Goodness is beginning to enter into her life. She's not all lost. But now the future is bright because Jesus is able to approach into her life, to touch, to speak his life. And now that's exactly what goes on. But in Francis Thompson's life, remember, he's there, a med school dropout. He's somebody who's lost his mother, has been running from God. He's in the midst of despair and actually planning at this moment, ready to take his life. So when he's got it already and he's about to make that final wound upon himself, he cries out, has one last gasp of breath, and he says, "God, if you can hear me, be here, be present to me." And moments after he does that, what happens? He gets a vision. He sees before him the specter or the soul of another famous poet. This is Thomas Chatterton, who had committed suicide in the very same way, in the very same place that he was in a century earlier. And he looked upon his face, and he saw that it was not joyful, but sad, gloomy, pained. And he realized that suicide wasn't going to end his pain, that it wasn't going to take things away from him, but rather perpetuate the grief which he was already experiencing. So sobered by this vision which was presented before him, he cast aside all these things, never intended to go down that road again. And what happened within his life is something really interesting. Within weeks, within months of this happening, he was discovered by other poets who brought him in, saw his greatness, and made sure that he was well taken care of. He returned back to the faith, to his Catholic faith, and began to live a life of joy for the rest of his days, writing some of the most beautiful poetry that has ever been written in the English language. In fact, G.K. Chesterton said he was the greatest of his age, behind the great Robert Browning. All because he let God enter into his life. He called out, and God heard. Ex plus nisce. God was moved. Now, what's going on here? What's going on here is that Thomas's life was all about running from God, all about fleeing from him, taking every step that he took, leading him further and further away from happiness, further and further away from fulfillment. Because he had that horrible experience of losing his mother when he was young, where he couldn't explain it. He couldn't write off how it happened, so he turned against God, who he thought had taken his mother from her. He thought that a relationship with God would strip him of his freedom, because he thought God was trying to take his life. God was the one who destroyed life, not one who gave life. He had that deep wound within his life. That's why he writes within his poem, "That Hound of Heaven," he says, "I fled him down the nights and down the days. I fled him down the arches of the years. I fled him down those labyrinthian ways of my own mind in the midst of tears. Up vistas, hopes I sped and shot precipitated adown titanic glooms of chasm and fears from those strong feet that followed after." See, we all fear God, don't we? We all have a fear of God in some way, especially when we've been hurt, when something difficult has come into our eyes and when we can't explain what's going on. We often blame God as though he was the one who caused everything to go wrong in our life, because we can't accept the fact that our actions sometimes have negative consequences, that the actions of others have negative consequences which we ourselves have to face. It's not God who does these things in our lives, but rather we, brothers and sisters, who do these things to ourselves, or other sinful people who cause hurt, which we have to deal with as well. Ex plus nisce. When God experiences some sort of difficulty or hurt, he is moved. He is moved to console and call us not to weep, but to bring healing into our lives. So when we don't turn to God, when we turn from God, what happens is that God never turns himself away from us. What does it say in 1 Timothy? It says, if we deny God, he will deny us. But if we are unfaithful, he will still remain faithful. Why? Because he cannot deny himself. That's what happens in our baptism, like Jabin is preparing for. In baptism, we become united with Christ, and Christ unites himself to us. So he can no more deny somebody united to him than he could deny his own very nature. That's God's love. That is why he has that esplanish there, that deep interior movement, turning at the sorrow of others, because he himself feels it. He's not separated from it. Esplanish there. God's got so very disturbed by our pain. And why? Because he knows what makes us happy. He's the one who made it. Francis Thompson wrote later on, he said, With unhurrying chase and with unperturbed pace, deliberate speed, majestic instancy, they beat. And a voice beat more insistent than the feet. All things betray thee, who betrays me. What he's saying there is, yes, when we betray God, when we turn our backs on God, when we run from him, when we won't let him enter into our lives, and we keep him at bay because we're so hurt. What really hurts us is those pleasures which we run to satisfy our longing, which can only be for him. Those pleasures which don't seem to last and end up in dissipation in the end, end up deepening our misery and despair because they don't last. They bring a small pleasure and a great amount of harm and regret and lead to despair like Francis himself faced when he was ready to take his life. They try to enslave us and convince us of our own worthlessness. You know, those things are like those pallbearers who were there guarding the coffin. The pallbearers guarding the coffin as though the death was the thing which is supposed to happen, which death is supposed to remain. But Jesus wants to enter in. Jesus wants to enter in, and those despairs which keep us, those thoughts which keep God at bay, try to keep Jesus from touching his touch of life into our lives. We can't let those pallbearers of fear and despair keep us from encountering Christ. That's what the answer is. The answer to our situation to let God draw close to us is to realize that he's always knocking at the door, always ready to come in and enter into our lives if we would just let him. It's like those great, beautiful images that we see of Jesus knocking at the door that has no handle on the outside. Because it is only we who can open the door and let God in. We have to take that courage to let him into our grief and our difficulty especially. Because Jesus wants to raise us up. Now, I give you a challenge today. I'll call it the 10-minute challenge because I know if I call it a 10-minute challenge, you'll remember 10 minutes is related to it. It's a 10-minute challenge. Because what it is I'm challenging you to spend 10 minutes every day this week with the scriptures, with the Bible. Because that is God's love message to us. Now, you're all already here. You come to Mass on Sundays. That's the most important thing to encounter God's love, to let him into your life. But the second most important thing you can do is study his word, opening up his message to you. Because when you do that, you allow him to communicate his love to you, not just on Sunday, but each and every day of the week to enter into that relationship with him. And I'll give you some suggestions on maybe what you should read. If you want to know after Mass, I'll let you know these things again. But maybe open up the scriptures to Psalm 139. That's the searchlight psalm. It says, Lord, search me. Lord, know me. Come to experience my inmost being. It's beautiful. Invite God into you that way. Maybe you can instead look at Isaiah chapter 43, which is another beautiful thing. And midway through, it says, forget the things of long past. Forget the deeds of long ago. Behold, I am doing something new in your life. Can you not perceive it? Or maybe something more intimate for you would be to go through the gospel, like Luke chapter 15, which has these beautiful parables which Jesus gives us. Firstly, the parable of the one lost sheep, who he abandons the 99 in order to search it out. Or the lost coin, who she seeks out and rejoices with great rejoicing when she finally finds. Or the story of the prodigal son, how God is constantly with his eyes upon the horizon, waiting for you to come back, to let him enter into your life, so that he can touch you. This is what our Lord wants. These are three great scriptures that you can dive into, to meditate upon, to invite God into your life. Spending just 10 minutes. That's a sixth of an hour. That's the length of, not even, it's the length of a commercial break throughout an entire show. Put it on TiVo, and you can just study the scriptures and go back to your 30-minute program. Just by letting God into your life, spending that 10 minutes a day and asking God that question, Lord, could you open a door into my life? Lord, draw near to me. I give you this 10 minutes. And when we do so, he is faithful and just to come into our lives, to experience us in ways which we never imagined possible, to bring his healing, to bring his touch of life, to revive our drooping and despairing spirit. I close now with the way Francis Thompson closes his great work, The Hound of Heaven. You know, I've left copies in the back for any of you who want to read the whole thing. It's quite a lengthy but beautiful poem. He ends it this way by letting God speak to him as he's relaying what God spoke to him in the depths of his heart. And I hope that today his words can speak to us in the very depths of our heart. God says, all which I took from thee, I did but take, not for thy harm, but just that thou mayest seek it in my arms. All which thy childish mistake fancies as lost, I have stored for thee at home. Rise, clasp my hand and come. Halts me by the footfall. Is my gloom after all? Shade of his hand outstretched caressingly. Ah, fondest, blindest, weakest, am I? It is I whom thou seekest. Thou drivest love from thee, who drivest away me. This week, let us not drive God's love away, but invite it to abide within our hearts that he may touch us, especially with something as small as spending 10 minutes in his sacred scriptures. Praised be Jesus Christ.